actually talked about it on You Betcha on the podcast.
He is an unrivaled source of baseball knowledge.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
A guy who always has your back.
Hair's back on, trying to make the uniform look sweet in a split second. Come out, and I'm trying to open the door. I'm like, what the? And I said, listen, buddy, put your babysitting shoes on, because Dad's going out for Father's Day. You got to watch Top Gun.
Ryan Roland Smith, every week with Wyman and Bob.
That's the opener right there.
He's here, everybody. We've elected to keep him on the show today, despite the transgression on Twitter. I don't know what we did to Ryan. I'm not sure what happened, why he felt it necessary to throw you and I under the bus, but it is what it is, and he's now with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Ryan Roland Smith. Hi, Ryan.
Hold on. Hey, guys. How are we doing?
We're good.
Hey, wait a second. Did you misread what I wrote yesterday? Like everyone else.
I just read it. I just saw a tweet, I think, from yesterday that says, last Monday, I was on with Wyman and Bob, and it was all doom and gloom talking Mariners. 3 days later, I was back on Seattle Sports talking about all the good stuff and a team pushing to be first in the AL West. The moral of the story, it is indeed early. Mm-hmm. So that sort of implies, you know, when you talk to us, it's doom and gloom. And the first response to that was, with all due respect to them, Wyman has basic baseball knowledge at best and can't do a baseball segment without using a football metaphor. And Bob is a sensationalist. And he's a sensationalist, they are perfect for sports radio.
All right. So hang on. So let me ask you this. When you guys read that, were you like, I mean, yeah, let's agree here. I mean, that's how it was. When I was talking to you guys last week, I was trying to keep it light, but it was like, man. It wasn't, and here's the thing. The tweet wasn't like, oh, hey, look, Wyman and Bob are all doom and gloom. I'm saying I was all doom and gloom. I wasn't ripping the team, but at the same time, I was sitting there going, man, like, you know, we're talking about, I was waiting for you guys to ask me, what do you do with the coach? Matter of fact, we did talk about that. What do you do with the coaches? Is the coaches to blame?
Yeah.
So on and so forth. 3 days later, I'm back on the same radio station saying, wow, this team's amazing. So,
yeah.
Whoever responded and said you were a sensationalist and had to use football analogies, I thought that was Ryan.
That was the first. That was the person who responded to his tweet. We start catching strays because Ryan was.
He did catch strays. That's right. And you know what's funny? As soon as I wrote that tweet, and then I read that first. It wasn't the first. Was it the first response? I don't know. Yeah. But I read that. I was like, come on, misread here. But that's the problem with Twitter, by the way. Why, Dave, I know you're not on it, and good for you.
Yeah.
The problem is, you say something, and no one actually like pays attention to the entire thing you say or the entire thing you post.
They just 2 seconds. Pick and choose, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you're forgiven, Ryan.
Yeah,
you're
we forgiven. Knew you. We knew where it was coming from. I just thought it was funny that, like, it does kind of sound like, well, when I talk to these guys, it's all doom and gloom.
But, and I was telling Bob, like, I watched all of your shows over the weekend. I saw your podcast.
By the way, he didn't really watch the show. He just wanted to say that, and he wanted to make fun of that.
We got to play. He just did an impression earlier. I want to get your take on it. I want you to rate this impression on a scale of. Do we have that, Matt?
Top step. You know,
is that your Australian
top
accent?
Top step, Bob.
On a scale of 1 to 10, be honest. How good was that? Would you confuse him for somebody that you grew up with, somebody that's originally from Australia?
Look, put it this way: the fact I know Dave, and the fact that you know he's trying so hard to do an impression. No, I wouldn't. But I'm telling you right now, if he was walking his kangaroo around Sydney and out in the outback, fair enough. I'm back.
So funny.
Top step. That'll be the last time I ever do an impersonation of you, Ryan. Okay, I'm sorry.
So good. Well, we opened the show just talking about, you know, listen, there are going to be the cynics that'll say, you beat up a terrible team, and the Rockies aren't good. I get it, but they swept the Reds prior to that, and the Reds have since gone on to win the next three in a row. That's a good team that has a better record than the Mariners. So that's a heck of a series. But the pitching, Ryan. The pitching, I mean, this is a team that's won 7 of 10. They allowed 4 total runs, and not all of them earned, but 4 total runs were allowed in 3 games against the Rockies. But in the last 5 games, they've allowed a total of 6 runs. And again, not all earned. This pitching staff and Luis Castillo looked like an ace in that outing. And just even with George Kirby going out, and he apparently had a sore arm going into that, so he didn't go deep. Even he goes shut out five innings. So it's just the pitching is living up to, I think, what we all expected coming out of the gates.
Yeah, and look, it's not automatic either. You know, because I'll mention that and say, oh, you know, look what the starting pitching's done last week. I mean, they've literally cut their ERA in half, and they're not walking anybody. And you look at that, and then the response is, oh, well, you know, that's what they're supposed to be doing. It's like, well, hold on a second. You've got a situation where you have a couple of young guys. Now, I'll throw Emerson Hancock in this as well, right? And even, obviously, and Brian Wu, who is on the IL. But you have a George Kirby, who the expectations are through the roof. Luis Castillo, yeah, of course, the expectations are through the roof. You got Logan Gilbert, who is pretty much bringing on a new pitch in the cut fastball, and that's one that you essentially are using that in counts when it's 2-0, 2-1, or some sort of, you know, some wrinkle off the fastball. So when you look at this, and I started to think this, I'm not going to lie, a week ago talking to you guys, I'm looking at this going, hold on a minute. All right, Bryce Miller is really overperforming. He's doing really well. But you're in a situation here where if George Kirby continues what he's doing and throwing too many strikes, Luis Castillo, that velocity keeps kind of dipping. It actually took a little turn on the way up, even when it was 27 degrees in Colorado, which was amazing. If you have some of these trends, then you're looking at this going, oh, man, this is not good. This rotation, and it's not saying it's a bust, but there's just these you know, little things that you factor in and say, well, man, maybe there is going to be some massive holes, you know, let alone dealing with a Brian Wu injury. So you look at that and say, okay, well, maybe this just isn't all it's cracked up to be. And then all of a sudden, man, they just turn a corner and just do the things that they do really well. And that's where that comment is, well, that's kind of what you expect. The strike-throwing ability comes to fruition. We've heard so much about arm injuries in these last couple of years and how guys are so incentivized to throw 98 at the top of the strike zone. But what you see shine through, and you can talk about a bunch of different rotations, even the Mets rotation, for example, what shines, who by the way, are second in the NL East, what shines through all the time is strike-throwing ability. Emerson Hancock, yes, I think it was 21 to 27 first pitch strikes. Even though he got beat up in that first inning, you're sitting there thinking, man, I'm in Denver right now, and they're seeing this ball really well. I don't have a two-strike pitch. It's just amazing when you have a rotation and the foundation of that rotation is strike-throwing ability from the top down, good things will end up happening. And I think that when you put these expectations on a rotation, that's their biggest strength, not stuff. There's plenty of stuff in there, don't get me wrong. But the commanding of a baseball, good things are going to eventually happen, and that's what we're starting to see what's been happening.
Hey, Ryan, this is really important. Obviously, we had the stat earlier this week. We still couldn't believe that we went 0 for 6 at Texas last year. But when you look at this Rangers team, what is it that that scares you the most going into this series?
Well, first of all, as a player walking in there, you know they won the World Series, and you watch them when you finish the season up, because you played them so tight there and you were in that race, you know, for the division down to that last game. So psychologically, you're walking into that place going, man, I just watched these dudes play in this building in a World Series. So that's number one. And number two, offensively, they are still a juggernaut. I know they've slipped down into, like, you know, some categories they're in top 10. It's not like they're top three like they were all year last year offensively. But, man, Adolis Garcia is hitting, what, 360, just crushing the ball. I know Kyle Seager's off to a little bit of a rocky start, but I just think offensively they can beat you. And the situation they're in now, and you mentioned the fact they just played the Rockies. Yeah, even though I was in Denver and they had some weather, it's one of these ones where if you give up those base runners and you got one or two base runners on, man, you're walking a tightrope with that team in Texas, because that's just going to be that formula for them. All the time is going to be that offense. And then, look, I'm not going to lie, man. Look, Dane Dunning, I talked about him all last year coming out of the gates. He's pitching against Logan Gilbert tomorrow. But when you've got pitchers like that and some of the guys in rotation, everyone gets so fixated on the fact that, you know, Jacob deGrom, he's out. Max Scherzer, he's out. He's going to come back pretty quickly. But when you look at their rotation, I mean, man, they've got guys who are holding it down in regards to that. So it's not going to be easy. I just think that they're coming out of Denver and going into Texas, you're going to see a couple three spots here and there. So offensively, I know even though the rotation's been going so well, But offensively, man, they need to pick it up a little bit so they can match what they're about to see in Texas.
Hey, there's something interesting going on with Julio. You know, over the weekend, I was tweeting out, man, he's got a six-game hitting streak. He's got 13 hits in those six games. I mean, going into the Red Series, he was hitting 186 with 238 on base. He's now hitting 276 with a 315 on base. So his numbers are dramatically improved. But then I got, you know, people on Twitter go, well, yeah, that's great. He's slapping singles. And I went back and looked. I'm like, all right, that's fair. I mean, it's accurate. Yeah. 11 of those 13 hits were singles. He's got 8 strikeouts, 1 walk, no home runs in that 6-game hitting streak, 3 runs driven in. It's interesting on the season, Ryan. He's got 24 total hits, 21 are singles. And he's got 3 doubles, 8 runs driven in, and still yet to hit a home run through 22 games. He hit his first one in the 4th game last season. Listen, the guy's coming up with a ton of hits. He's not doing damage yet, but I take it as a positive that, you know, he's seeing the ball, he's making contact, he's not trying to yank everything, he's going the other way. The home runs are going to be there. I don't have any doubt. Do you have any concerns over 24 total hits this year, 21 being singles?
I think I have some concerns if he starts to really look up at the scoreboard and say, hold on a minute, I've got 0 right now, as we're heading into the end of April, because, you know, look, he likes to put himself on this kind of platform to say that I want to be one of the best players in the game. And I think that you mentioned some of the singles, right? So I think what's kind of happened, and just to give kind of that generic throughout the month of April, league spring training, yes, he's made some adjustments with his swing. And we've talked about it a bunch, right? Get the ball off the ground. The biggest thing is just get the ball off the ground as much as you can, and he's going to do damage. I think what happened in the beginning of the season, he was swinging and missing a ton. Still hitting the ball on the ground a ton as well. But then all of a sudden, he's kind of in his head a little bit, maybe trying to make these adjustments. And coming out of that in the last week, what I've noticed is just better contact. Yes, he's still hitting the ball on the ground just as much. But I think for him, clawing himself out of what he started the year off with, and you mentioned hitting sub 200, I would take any day of the week him hitting breaking balls. He's hitting 310 against breaking balls. And he's hitting 292 against fastballs as well, right? So I would take any day of the week, if his approach, I'm going to make better contact, I want to cut down on the swing and miss from what it was at the beginning of the season, and the home runs will come. I know that sounds super cliche, but when you have a guy like Julio Rodriguez who has that much exit velo off that bat, you just have to trust that. Don't worry about getting the ball off the ground or any of that. Just keep making contact. And guess what? What happens is when he's on base, when he's spending more minutes out on first, second, and third base, different things start happening with this lineup as opposed to, oh, okay, I have to get the ball off the ground and I have to start launching balls and pick up on the home run pace. I would rather see this version because, you know, ultimately what's going to happen is he's going to start feeling way more confident and that ball's going to start getting on the line. That launch angle is going to go up just a little bit and the ball's going to start leaving the ballpark. And then on the other side of this as well, I think that when you are hitting sub 200 and you've kind of been punched in the face a little bit coming out of the gates, man, you'll take those singles all day long. You see that guy around in third base and you're getting that picking up those RBIs, you'll take them all day long. And like I said, I think the home runs, am I a little bit concerned? I'm only concerned if he gets in the main, he's like, oh, man, I need to get back to trying to start launching balls because then he's just going to get back and forth. I like this approach he's taking right now.
Hey, how about Class A, man? 6 games. I never would have expected, you know, he'd have a 250 average. He's got 3 RBIs, 5 hits. I mean, this kid's kind of worked out, but do you think this is just beginner's luck, or do you think this kid has staying power?
I mean, look, first of all, big prospect. Every time I talk to someone, they're like, oh, man, this kid's special. He's an electric player and everything else. I do like the fact that, look, you know, young guy. We saw this with Cade Marlowe last year. Remember, he got in that rhythm, and all of a sudden he was doing some damage down the bottom of the lineup. So from a team standpoint, I'll take it all day long. If you can get someone who's more of a dynamic player, and we saw all those strikeouts at the beginning of the year, love that. Love that aspect of it. Bring it on all day long. Someone who can slap the ball into the left field and run a little bit. Use those wheels. Absolutely love it. Will the league catch up to him? Yeah, sure, he'll go through it. But I think that if the more he can get comfortable, the more you'll see of what we're seeing right now. And again, look, this team, I say it all the time, when offensively, you know, they did some damage in Colorado. Love to see it. You know, seeing a 10 spot. Love to see it. But we know as this year goes on and everything starts to sort of average out, they went from, you know, Julio and JP really struggling at the top and offensively just nothing, no heartbeat whatsoever, to all of a sudden showing some. When it all kind of levels out, you're going to look down and say, all right, down the bottom of that lineup, how deep is this lineup, especially if you're pitching against it? And if you have a guy like Class A who can fill up a 7, 8, 9 down the bottom of that lineup, the way he swings a bat, I'll take it all day long.
If Arias, and I haven't seen an update, maybe it's happened, but if he does go on the IL, who would you like to see them call up?
Oh, man, tough one.
Samad Taylor, not tough. Come on.
Yeah, so Samad Taylor.
Bob's not really asking you a question.
You love the speed, yeah.
I was giving you an opportunity. You didn't take it, so I had to jump in.
Yeah. No, hey, look, again, man, it's one of these ones. I'll be honest with you. You notice how much better the pitching is when you have defense behind you. Whoever you can prioritize to play really solid on that side of the infield will take it all day long. That's honestly, if you can fill the gaps and have defense. I mean, I'm talking even Dylan Moore when you talk about someone who's role playing.
Right.
Notice what happens to that pitching. So I would, at that point in time, when you're looking at who you're going to bring up, prioritize someone who can play rock solid defense, cut down on some of the mental errors, and keep your pitching in it, because that's going to be the backbone of this team. Pitching sounds boring. I get it. Pitching, and you've got to play good defense behind them too.
Hey, Ryan, goofy question for you, but we were just watching Aaron Boone got ejected. I think it's been like 40?
Yeah, more than most.
Yeah. But and they were showing some highlights on Major League Baseball Network, and I'm just curious, what was the most entertaining one that you ever saw? A manager get kicked out.
Well, first of all, let's elaborate here. Are you talking about the fan who was yelling behind him? Are you talking about that ejection?
I know. We heard about that he got kicked out for something the fan was screaming?
That was gold, man. Because the reason that was so good is because you had the camera angle to show it. Now, if you didn't have that, like let's say it was 15 years ago and they didn't have that extra camera angle, like paying attention, you just see some clown, you know, drinking his beer, two rows back, yelling, you know, drawing at the umpire. And then, oh, that was rock solid. But in regards to, you know, the most, you put me on the spot here in regards to the most entertaining. Look, there's been some down in the minor leagues, mate, down in Z-ball. I'm telling you right now, down in the semi-pros, in the depths of A-ball, where you've had some managers who just are fed up with life in general. And they have just taken it out on an umpire. We used to have this pitching. Matter of fact, he spent a bit of time in Seattle, and God, I hope he's not listening or someone passed this on. He was a pitching coach. His name was Scott Budner. I'll never forget. My sister was in town, and she had a video camera. So I was pitching, and so she's videotaping me, right? She's visiting for a week or whatever. And at the corner of the shot, this is like, you know, I mean, this is back in, you know, dinosaurs roamed the earth, so the technology wasn't great. But you see the corner of the shot, here comes Scott Budner just arguing with the umpire, and he's just let her rip. And she's like, you can hear her commentary. She's like, what do we have here? Oh, that's not good. Anyway, so he's just going berserk on the umpire, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, man. I'm standing out in the mound. You can just see me in the background, just kind of like kicking the dirt, everything else. He just went off. And then I remember showing him 2 days later. I'm like, hey, bud, you want to check out this video? What video? my sister had this. And he's just watching it like this, just stone-faced. And he said, and he's just like, get rid of this footage. Straight away. it was classic. But no, look, there's been some absolute classics down the mile. I'm just trying to think, some of the big leagues that I've witnessed. But there's nothing better, man, when a coach can get out there and just let it rip. Good stuff.
I love that. Because they just turn into children.
We were just watching that montage on MLB Network,
hilarious.
I mean, Lou Piniella was the king. I mean, they were showing Earl Weaver, who was pretty good. They showed Billy Martin coming out with his hat pulled to the side, the bills to the side. He looks like a rapper, but he just various managers, Tony La Russa just freaking out on the umps. I mean, that was gold. And then, you know, Lou Piniella out there kicking his hat and everybody's on the bench just cracking up. And you see the players in the field with the mitts over their face because they're cracking up watching him just explode.
The one where Lou is kicking his hat.
That's the one.
A couple years ago, I remember speaking to Aaron Boone, He was calling these hitters savages. Do you remember that one? It was a couple of years ago. He's like, he was arguing with balls and strikes, and he's like, my guys are savages. They're savages. Like, he's talking about the hitters. And the umpire was just kind of confused. He's like, they're what? Excuse me? That was good. That was good. I mean, nothing beats Lou Piniella. I mean, I can watch those clips all day long. There is nothing better when a guy just absolutely lets it rip and just gets his money's worth. It's the best.
Did you? Who was the angriest guy you ever played under?
That was
the most likely to just go out there and just black out rage.
Well, look, I mean, I'm trying to think that. Oh no, this is easy. What am I thinking? I was just thinking it's pure Mariners. No, dude, Kirk Gibson. Oh my God, this guy. Here's a quick one for you, Kirk Gibson. I never forget. Now this wasn't on. He would let it rip on umpires, and this is when like he's got like a shoulder reconstruction, a neck fusion, and a knee done all at the same time. He can barely move around. Like, he can barely move his neck. You know, like, his whole head would move when you turn your shoulders. That's how banged up he was, but he was always getting his money's worth. I never forget, though, him as a manager. My last ever at-bat, I get up to hit. We're playing the Giants, and I have to bunt. Sure enough, I'm on deck, and the guy in front of me walks. I was like, oh, come on, man, just let me swing. And, you know, it's a pathetic bunt to the point where Buster Posey was like, you know, giggling the whole time. And I come in, I'm thinking to myself, man, like, all I'm thinking about is just, you know, getting some good innings here and just getting dialed in back on the mound. And, you know, and so I put the bat back and, you know, helmet back, take my batting gloves off, like, oh, you know, okay, how am I going to start off this next hitter? I turn around, Kirk Gibson is in my face. Let me have it. Like, let me have it, because I couldn't get the bunt down. And I was like, oh, man. And I'm like, you know, I could literally, like, push him over with a finger right now because he's so banged up. Like, he can barely move. He's just so, like, surgically repaired. But I'm sitting there going, man, this dude is scary. That is for sure. But no, he would just let it rip.
He wasn't happy with your effort?
It was pathetic. I remember watching the back, and just like Scott Butler, I'm like, please get rid of this footage.
I deserved it. It's bad when you've got the catcher laughing at you. That's not good.
That's not good. That's a bad sign.
He is Ryan Roland Smith with us each and every day. We're talking about the good times. We talk about the bad time. We got to talk about whatever's going on. That's just how it goes. Right. We're giving you the unadulterated truth. That's what you get here.
Or sensationalism.
Yeah, actually. Sensationalism.
Well, hey, it's good, man. You got to be honest, right? And last week, it was not good.
It wasn't good.
It was tough to watch.
People count on us to talk about what's in front of us, and at the time, what's in front of us was not a good thing. That's how it goes. Ryan, we appreciate it. As always, we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Top step.
Jeez.
Threw me back.
You'll not hear a finer Australian accent.
We got to play that for Adam Ray. See if he thinks he can top it. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Coming up, Seahawks are faced with an interesting dilemma in one mock draft. We're going to get into that next. Coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to Ryan Roland Smith, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys are just tuning in and missed that conversation, it will be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab. Scroll down to our picture, click on that, and it's right there waiting for you. Click subscribe. Never forget to do that. Most important thing you can do, click subscribe. We've been having fun with these mock drafts, taking a look at all these, and boy, they're no shortage of them, Dave. There's a million mock drafts out there, and they're conversation pieces for those that keep texting and saying, you guys, they don't know what they're talking about. They're never accurate. Nobody's saying this is what's going to happen. It's just people's impression of players, different players. I think it's kind of fun.
Well, I think also the guys who do it, they put a lot of work into it, you know. We've been doing our little profiles, and, you know, I would say 20 to 30 minutes of watching, you know, whatever the guy's film is and, you know, looking up all the – and so, yeah. I mean, they're also talking to guys from the NFL and people that know, and so
– yeah, I don't think they're betting money on it. They're just saying, here's how I see it going. That's their opinion. Okay. Yeah. But I think most people get it. It's just kind of interesting for me to see how people view the Seahawks from the outside. Do they project based on what they feel the team needs versus what the team may do versus what they're hearing they may do, and other teams are going to trade up, and there's all of that stuff. It's just, for me, it's a fun time leading up to the draft. But the latest from this one, CBS Sports, couple of things that stood out. First of all, I do like seeing more recently in mock drafts, and again, doesn't mean it's going to happen, but Michael Penix is slowly moving up the up the board, whereas there was a period there where you had a hard time finding any mock drafts with him in the first round at all, much less top, upper half of the first round.
Yeah, him and Bo Nix both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just, it's as time has gone on and we're getting closer, we're now just a couple days away, the ones I'm looking at have him moving up. That could be based on conversations they've got with their sources. Maybe they just have gone back and looked at Phil. Who knows? But this one has him moving up to number 10. They have a mock trade going on there. So they've got him going number 10 to the Raiders, right behind his former teammate, Roma Dunze, at 9, going to the Bears. Top looks pretty much like what we've been seeing. They've got Caleb Williams 1, Jaden Daniels 2, Drake May 3rd. We've seen those two flip-flop. Second and third, Daniels and May. Fourth pick, Harrison, J.J. McCarthy sitting there at 5. Malik Nabers, Joe Alt. That's the other consistent one. First offensive lineman is Joe Alt in, I think, just about every mock I've seen.
Yeah, I think his dad is John Alt, that used to play for the Kansas City Chiefs and was just a monster. Just an absolute
He's
monster.
Listed, what is he, 6'7", 322 pounds is what they've got him listed at here.
That guy's not moving inside to guard or center.
He's a big human. So then you scroll down again, Penix at 10. Great to see. They got Brock Bowers. He'll be off the board, according to this, at number 11. Then you scroll down to where the Seahawks are at number 16. They've got him going with Jared Verse. Now, we saw that early. I'd say Fautanu still has the, if you want to just go basic numbers, how many times he's been attached to the Seahawks. He's the leader, I would say. But early it was Verse, and now interesting to see him here again.
Verse?
Yeah, yeah. And that's with Latu out there. They have Latu going 19 to the Rams.
I think that's a mistake. I would switch those two.
And one more, Fautanu going 20 to the Steelers in this mock.
Yeah, you know, there's another, I want to say there's another guard in there that that we talked about today. Yeah, Graham Barton. We talked about him, you know, that he is he's a guy that could move inside. But, to me, Verse, I looked at those two, and I really fell in love with Latu. He's just such a refined pass rusher. And he's, you know, like Moyer was telling us, you know, I saw him drop back into coverage, get an interception, actually. I mean, this guy's just a good football player. He's got great instinct. So, to me, I would switch those two because Jared Verse, I think, is – he's really strong. I mean, he was the guy we talked about. He got 31 reps on the bench press, but you watch him on the field, it translates, man. He is incredibly powerful. He'll just bull rush people and put 320-pound tackles on their butts. So, and he's a big dude. He's 6'4", 260. So,
Latu, what is he? They got him 6'5", 265.
Yeah, he does not look like a 265-pound man. I mean, the way he moves around the field, he just smaller. He's quick. Yeah, so, I would switch those two, but I don't know. I think he's special. I think Bowers is. I really like Fautanu. I think that might be who they're taking, but I don't know if Penix is there. And I would not be surprised at all if all six quarterbacks are in the first round, that you get Penix and Bo Nix in
there.
That
would be, I mean, just for our purposes as a conversation, the conversation would be dramatically more interesting talking about Penix and his future and what is it, how do you use him, how do you bring him along versus. And this is not talking skill and need and all that, because Fautanu is probably their biggest need. And I would be, if they took him, I'd be perfectly happy. But in terms of sort of the unknown excitement, like, wow, what's he going to be? Is he going to be great? Is he going to not? Mm-hmm. Is he going to just be this guy? Who knows? I mean, there's so much to wonder about with Penix if that were to happen. I'd be very excited about that just because there's so much curiosity attached to it versus, all right, yeah, Verse would make sense. He's an edge rusher, their biggest need. Nah, not really. You know, Fautanu would make perfect sense. It addresses a need by all accounts. He's, if not the best, one of the best at that spot. So, yeah the Penix one would be, it's probably not your most pressing need right now, but it would be kind of exciting to look forward in the next year or two and, all right, how does he fit? What does Sam Howell's presence mean? What do they do with Geno if he has a brilliant year?
Yeah, I think if you get an opportunity to solve that problem and you think you're 100% in on that's going to be your quarterback for the next whatever 12 years or whatever, I don't see how you pass on that if that's, you know, and Ryan Grubb knows a ton about Penix, right? So he knows, same thing with Faltanu. I mean, that's, I mean, he coached both of those guys. So, you know, he knows everything there is to know about him. And I think, you know, especially, I don't know how much the whole quarterback thing, like Zach Wilson, didn't he say a couple of stupid things, or he said something about not wanting to play to get hurt?
Yeah.
You know, that he didn't want to go on the field.
Well, there was a, with Wilson, was it his first year where his teammates got mad at him about, like, he didn't really take responsibility?
Yeah, he said something. He threw somebody under the bus.
Yeah. I just remember, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I felt like he kind of got on the wrong side of his teammates right out of the gate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just, I mean, there's no way that happens. Grubb knowing, you know, Penix, I mean, I don't think there's any deep, dark secrets about him anyway. I think he's just a generally just a good dude. But I think, you know, knowing that he's driven by football and he loves it and it's just everything to him, just knowing that alone is what I think makes up. And a lot of these guys that fail, the quarterbacks that are the first round busts, which, by the way, that's always fascinating to me. Like, you know, you have an entire draft and nobody picks Doug Baldwin. I mean, that's pretty crazy. But more to me, it's more fascinating when you have a top 10 pick who's just a surefire and he just entirely washes out. That is amazing to me. And that's also the biggest nightmare for a team when you waste that capital. But Penix, I just think anything with those guys, they're going to know everything about them because of Grubb. And I think if Penix is there, I feel like they take him at number 16. But
he had a great quote in the Players Tribune. I don't know if you saw this from Penix. He says, "I hear it all the time. He's been injured. What happens if he gets injured again? Haven't I shown you what that looks like? Haven't I put almost 2,000 plays on tape since my last injury, since my fourth season-ending injury in 4 years that's constantly mentioned whenever my name is brought up? Truth is, I'd be more worried if I'd never been injured. We don't all come back the same. I can't speak for those who have never gone through anything, but I can speak on me. I've seen how deep my foundation is. I know the storms. I'm prepared to weather. For most people, that'd be the end of their story." And then he goes on talking about his journey.
That's amazing.
But he said the end, he goes, "So I have no problem taking all the MRIs and x-rays you ask of me. Truth is, it's an EKG that will tell you everything you need to know about me." That's a great line.
That really is. It's like he sat down and wrote that out.
It is in this Players Tribune.
So. Oh, he did write it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's...
No, that's pretty amazing. I mean, just hearing all those things from him, I mean, that sounds to me like a guy that's hungry and loves football. I mean, went through the same thing, you know? And like you said, I think that there is... Pete used to call it grit. Like, this guy has grit. Well, sometimes it's him overcoming an injury. Mm-hmm. So look, people get hurt all the time in football. I don't see where that's any kind of, and it looks like, you know, the kind of things that he had, they were like accidents, like car crashes, like Haniger, right? You know, right. It's not like some chronic thing because he's not in shape and he's not, you know.
He doesn't have the Rendon hamstring going.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's just, you know, those were just, you know, plays where he just, you know, got blown up and it's over. But also you get from that, you get the grit of how much the guy loves the game and then also that he's willing to work for it.
And how does he respond to adversity?
Exactly.
So he's I love that. You need an EKG to see really what's going on. That's fantastic. Yeah. All right, coming up, a couple of former Seahawks aren't that happy about what they've heard in regards to a now infamous wall in the team facility. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Picturegate, Dave. Picturegate. Oh, is our guy John Schneider coined the phrase last we spoke. We'll speak to him one more time the day of the draft. We'll talk to him on Thursday.
He's going to tell us exactly what he's going to do.
He's going to give us every pick they've got in mind, all the teams they're calling for trades, who they're looking to trade up for. He's going to give us all the dirt because that's what they do. That's what GMs do before the draft.
They do
just
that.
Let it all out there.
Yeah, it's so funny. I remember talking to John about it, and he's like, nobody talks to anyone and lets any, you know, any clue or hint on who they're going to take. But then, you know, when it comes to like cut down time, everybody's like, hey, what do you got? You know, open about, you know, this guy and that guy, are you gonna, you know, and a lot of times they try to sneak those guys through, but it's more of a communication than, I mean, before the draft, especially the Seahawks, they do an amazing job just keeping tight lip. You never,
they do.
There's never been a time where I've been like, oh yeah, I knew they were gonna take that. Somebody said something. No, nobody ever says anything.
Yeah, yeah, they've got that locked down, and they've had it locked down. They have been very adept at keeping secrets. Meanwhile, the picture gate continues because former players are chiming in on it over the weekend, and we had Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor weigh in on it. Cam Chancellor tweeted out, "You can't erase the Legion. The standard is already set." And then Richard Sherman was replying to Cam's tweet. So for those wondering why you're talking about it, because they're talking about it. Sherman said, yeah, I'm sure every great franchise is removing its legendary players' pictures from their building because they can't ever live up to that. Makes sense. Sure, the Ravens don't have pictures of Ray Lewis and that great defense. I'm sure Pittsburgh doesn't have pictures of all the great moments. I'm sure Dallas, San Francisco, New England all remove pictures of the history of their franchise because of a new coach. Makes sense. So you got Cam, who's just a little more, you know, a little more brevity, but kind of saying the same thing. And, of course, Sherm, much more, many more words to describe his displeasure.
I think, honestly, I think if you look at it from the standpoint of it, really, it's a facility for the Seahawks and the history of the Seahawks. That's part of their history. But, like, that was a huge amount of space taken up by the era when Pete was here. So to me, I mean, where's the, you know, Chuck Knox era? Where's you know, big murals of Steve Largent? What about Sean Alexander? What about Matt Hasselbeck and Holmgren? And, you know, that was just, that whole wall was very specifically just the Pete era. So I think what's going to happen, here's what I believe is going to happen. They said something about monitors, right? They're going to put like big television monitors up there instead. And I think you're going to see every... you know, every different regime sort of represented. You know, you're going to have through the years, this, you know, probably have a picture of Steve Rabel up there, you know, and catching a pass and running his 4.5 40, 4.37. So yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to happen, and they're going to replace it. But that entire wall, like, it had Bobby and Russ and Cam and, you know, Doug Baldwin and Marshawn. I mean, it was very specific, and that was a huge amount of area where it was just dominated by that, by those years. And so
those are the greatest years in the history of the organization.
Yeah, but I mean, they went to the Super Bowl, you know, one time, you know, that was the Holmgren era, and they had a really good thing going on there.
Yeah.
Remember 1984, they made a run, they got to the AFC Championship game. And, you know, that was a huge...
Not really, but I mean, I know they did. I don't really recall that year, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. So yeah, it was, they were one game away from going to the Super Bowl, but yeah, so I feel like, okay, you take all that down and then come back with something that includes all of that. And it has something for everybody. So, yeah, to me, I don't know. It just didn't make sense once I saw, you know, and I didn't really think about it because, you know, that was the P era and everything. But I can understand why you would want to change that and make it about the history of, you know, and write your new history. I don't think it's anything to do with ripping down the Legion of Boom or anything like that. But I'll bet you that you're going to see these monitors, and it's going to be on a loop that runs you through, like, the entire history of the franchise.
Yeah, which would, I think, would be very appropriate. You know, you celebrate everything, all the good that's gone on. You know, it shouldn't have to be strictly about who won the Super Bowl. I mean, it's very well documented. And you do, that needs to be represented and celebrated, and
absolutely,
you know, regardless of who the head coach was and who it is now. I you know, like I said, when this first came out, I don't know why. Usually I can definitely pick a side and make my points about it, whether people agree or not. This is one I've been kind of like, yeah, I get why he feels that way. And then somebody on the other side, yeah, I get why he feels that way. I'm just like, I've got splinters in my tailpipe from sitting on the fence. Because I don't have a definitive, like, no, this is wrong, or no, this is right, and these guys are wrong. I get both sides, and it's really a a boring place to be, Dave.
Is it right? Well, I appreciate it because now I don't have to sit here and try to convince you.
I mean, what you're saying makes perfect sense. When John talked about it, it made sense. And then when I hear Cam and Sherm, I get it. I get that, too. I get the people that look at it from the outside and go, well, it seems, insecure. It seems like, you're sort of intimidated by the past success. Or why would that have any impact on you? Your job is on the field. What do you care what's on the wall? Or I've seen all of it. And I'm like, yeah, I get all that, too.
Yeah.
I think each side basically has some ground to stand on here. Now, I guess I'm waiting to see, all right, well, let's see what it looks like before everybody flips out.
Yeah.
Let's see what they do in its place. You know, you're talking. It's a. I didn't see it. You went and took a look, and you're in tight with security there. They'd keep me out. But
you almost got shot.
Yeah,
trying to get in there.
Yeah, I was beaten about the head and shoulders repeatedly. But it was.
It made sense to me once I went through there.
Yeah, I want to see what it looks like when they have whatever they're going to have.
Yeah,
whatever monitors or whatever it's going to be. Then we can go. Hey, this what a great idea.
Yeah.
This doesn't really represent.
Yeah, I think,
hope it would.
Well, if they made any kind of mistake, I think that they should have made the timing a little bit closer with, okay, rip these down. Now let's put up the monitors with have something
do it all
in
at
mind.
Once.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but whatever. They've got other fish to fry, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to get this draft taken care of. And then, you know, the other thing, too, we forget about the draft. After that, the free agency period, you know, with the undrafted rookies.
Yeah.
It's huge.
That's
mean,
big.
You
that
can get
where Doug Baldwin came from.
Yeah, Jermaine Kearse.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a couple of guys.
All right, coming up, it's an early dose of John Morosi this week. He is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.